This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lawmakers at the North Carolina General Assembly are debating controversial legislation this week. House Republicans approved a measure to allow magistrates who disagree with gay marriage to refuse to perform all marriages. The final vote in the House is scheduled for today. And on the Senate side, legislators are considering a bill to increase the waiting period for an abortion from 24 to 72 hours. But several other unrelated provisions were added to the bill, and that complicates its passage. Senator Jeff Jackson is a Democrat. He thinks the flurry of activity by GOP leaders may be an attempt to avoid public criticism.
I'll tell you, in terms of timing, I don't think it's a coincidence. They want to get this controversial social legislation done as quickly as possible because there are only so many stories you can run in a daily newspaper.
But Republican lawmakers say they're working to protect religious freedom and women and children. Jorge Valencia is WUNC's Capitol reporter, and he joins me from Raleigh. Welcome, Jorge.
Hello, Frank.
Let's talk about this bill on magistrates refusing to perform marriages if they choose. What does this bill say?
Well, the way that it works is that it would allow magistrates who say that they disagree with gay marriage for religious reasons to recuse themselves from officiating at any weddings at all. That's the basics of the bill. Is this stems from federal court decisions last October that lifted the state's ban on gay marriage. And since then, we've had, I believe, just a handful, maybe half a dozen magistrates resigning. This is among hundreds across the state resigning, saying that it was for because they oppose same-sex marriage. So that's what the bill does.
All right. How did this bill come about?
Well, it actually came from the person who is arguably the most powerful elected official in the state, Senator Phil Berger. This is Senate Bill 2, so it's the second bill filed this session. He said that back in the fall, he said that this is going to be an important issue for him, and he came straight out of the gate with it. It went up in the Senate a couple of weeks ago, and now it's here in the House. The House gave its preliminary approval to it yesterday, and as we speak right now, House members are still debating it on the floor right now, and counting almost 4 hours of debate on this issue.
All right. Well, much of the debate yesterday, I understand, focused on religion. I want to listen to Representative Burt Jones. He's a Republican from Rockingham County.
Marriage was not established by the laws of the state of North Carolina. It was not established by the federal law of this land. Marriage was established by God. And there are at least 500 references to marriage in the Bible. And every one of those is for a man and a woman.
All right. But opponents say it's a slippery slope, allowing discrimination in other ways. Let's listen to Rick Glazier. He's a Democrat from Cumberland County.
Public officials simply cannot be allowed to pick and choose which part of the job they want to perform on the people's dime and which they do not. For example, could police officers decide to investigate crimes or not if the victim was gay? Could an immigration official refuse to enforce border laws because his religion teaches him all strangers are welcome?
It does sound like this could raise some constitutional questions. Was that part of the debate, whether or not this would be approved by any at the court level?
Well, certainly, I think that the recurring theme on the supporter side, like you just said, was this religious aspect of it. They invoked God several times, several members yesterday and this morning. And then on the Democratic side, the response was whether or not this would be a form of discrimination. Now, Phil Berger, like I said a moment ago, he's the author of this bill. He's an attorney. Of course, this was something that he and the other bill writers were thinking about, whether a bill like this one would pass a constitutional muster. So the bill is written very narrowly. And even one of his Democratic counterparts a few weeks ago, Senator Floyd McKissick, he's from Durham, he's also an attorney, and he called it, quote, a very cleverly crafted bill. So it is very likely that this is going to pass, this is going to become law. By the way, just to update you, a couple of moments ago, the bill was passed and mostly along party lines, 66 to 44. It's unclear whether the governor will sign it, but even if he doesn't sign it or even if he does veto it, there's enough support for the governor's veto to be overruled. And then we will likely see it see some sort of a legal challenge against it in the courts.
All right. And it's passed the House. Where does it stand with regard to the Senate? Has this been to the Senate?
Yes, it originated in the Senate. It passed in the Senate. Now that the House passed passed the bill again just a few moments ago. It's going to be sent to the governor's
desk. Up to the governor. He has a couple of options. He could veto the bill. He has voiced some opposition to it, but he didn't say he'd veto. He could allow it to become law by not signing. Mm-hmm. That's another option as well.
Yeah, there are two options. One, he could sign, of course, which he said he won't. He could allow 10 days to pass without a signature, which by default allows it to become law, or he could veto it. But again, there is enough support from Republicans in each chamber that they could ostensibly override his veto if he decides to veto it. So what we're looking at is a very, very strong likelihood that this bill is going to become law pretty soon.
All right. Jorge Valencia, Capital Bureau, thank you so much.
Thanks, Frank.
The Senate is also moving on a controversial measure, the so-called Women and Children's Protection Act of 2015. WNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery's been following that story, and he joins me now. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hey, Frank.
Tell us about this. It moves the waiting period for an abortion from 24 to 72 hours, right?
It does. That would make North Carolina one of five states in the country with a three-day waiting period for women who are seeking an abortion, joining South Dakota, Utah, Missouri, and Oklahoma, which passed legislation earlier this month. So a three-day waiting period is perhaps the most noteworthy component of this bill. It would also share some statistics about keeping confidentiality true, but it would share some statistics with DHHS, and there are other provisions here. There's one provision that is unclear. The original version of this bill would not have allowed residents, would not have allowed medical students at UNC and ECU from performing abortions. That came out of the bill. Then the third version of this legislation was introduced yesterday, and there are three vaguely written lines deep in this bill that talk about having to have a qualified physician perform any abortion after 16 weeks. It's not entirely clear the way it's written what a qualified physician mean. It references board certification. So I talked to one doctor yesterday, and she was unclear as to whether or not a resident would have that board certification and would be qualified. So one of the emerging questions, getting into the weeds a little bit here, but an important point is whether or not residents and medical students will be allowed to perform abortions, and hopefully we'll get clarification on that relatively soon.
As for the forced 72-hour waiting period, are there exceptions in the case of rape or incest?
There are not, or in the case of domestic violence, there are not exceptions.
Now, you talked to one of the committee members who voted in favor of the bill, Representative Stan Bingham, and asked him why the 72-hour waiting period. Let's listen to his response.
I think the majority of the bill was protection of some of these young girls who've gotten pregnant and want to make sure that they're in a safe environment And I think that was the purpose of the bill. I don't really know. I heard comments for and against.
He voted for it, though. He didn't know.
He voted for it. That's correct.
Okay,
that's
it was just unclear from what he said which way he voted, but I guess he was
for it. Yes, it was.
All right, so the title of the law is related to abortion. Again, you would be forced to wait, so women don't really have a choice. They're being protected, but they have they can't really choose whether to wait 72 hours. They must if this bill passes. The title of the law related to abortion, some abortion restrictions have changed. It reflects some other changes in the bill. What were they?
So that was the title, just to be clear, when it was filed on April 1st. Now the new title is Women and Children's Protection Act of 2015, and it stops there. There's no mention of abortion. There's no mention of changing or strengthening or adjusting regulations. Now Women and Children's Protection Act of 2015 covers some different provisions, some different things, including some loopholes that were open when it came to statutory rape statutes and domestic violence statutes. And what legislators did is they pulled in provisions from other bills that were filed by Democratic Senator Jeff Jackson of Mecklenburg County that were measures that had wide bipartisan support.
All right. So these would impose further restrictions and make it more difficult. In other words, in cases of domestic violence, make it easier for women to file charges. Is that right?
Yes. It would close
some of those loopholes. So now if you vote against this bill, you're voting against something that the Democrats have been promoting. It puts them in a tough position, right?
Yeah, I talked to Senator Jackson yesterday, and he said, you know, what he expects is for some of the attack ads to come out during the election cycle and to use this vote against him, saying that, you know, he voted against good law for that will protect women and children and voted against some of his own measures. And I asked him, you know, whether or not that's just politics and that's just a clever maneuver, if you will. And he shared that he just thought that's bad practice if that is, in fact, why this played out or how this is playing out.
All right. And what's next for this bill?
Well, it started in the House. It's in the Senate right now, advanced through committee. We should note that both of these bills were heard in small committee rooms yesterday, among the smallest. There were lines out the door, at least for the bill that Jorge was talking about. The measure that I was covering was in a packed committee room, and there was no recording. I mean, these moved through fairly quickly. Today, it's in front of the full Senate. They should be picking up at any point in the next few minutes. They just took a 30-minute recess to go into caucus. The Republicans did to discuss exactly what we're not sure, but conventional wisdom would lead one to wonder if they are talking about how to amend this bill or if they're going to change anything about it before the full Senate votes on it, which is scheduled to happen here in the next few minutes. After that, it will also head to the governor's desk.
All right. Well, if it happens in the next hour, we will bring you up to date. But thank you for this much, Jeff DeBerry.
Thanks, Frank.
Just ahead, we're going to talk with Steve Inskeep, Morning Edition host and author, about his new book about Andrew Jackson. And you will hear it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.